to avoid the penalties, and most people didn't want to be alone or live with strangers. In the case of Dalinar, he had been more than willing to pay his penalty and then some. He didn't have another woman, and in fact still loved Marthona. He just couldn't bear to stay with her anymore when so much of her time and attention were directed toward the needs of the Ninth Cave. He traded belongings in order to pay the full penalty as soon as possible so he could leave, but he hadn't planned to stay away. He wanted to go only because the situation was too distressing for him to remain, and once he did leave, he just kept going until he found himself in the mountain foothills some distance to the east, where he stumbled across the flint mine and stayed. Ayla was still wide awake when Janayla and Wolf came into the tent. She got up to help her daughter get ready for bed. After some attention from her, Wolf went to the place she had set out for him, using his blankets. She greeted some others who had just come into the large, sturdy, not quite permanent structure designed to sleep several or to keep them dry when it rained.
"Where were you, Mother?" Janayla asked. "You weren't here when I came back with Zelandani."
"I was out riding Winnie," Ayla explained.
To the young girl who loved nothing more than riding her horse, the explanation was sufficient.
"Can I go out with you tomorrow? I haven't ridden Gray for a long time."
"How long?" Ayla asked with a smile.
"This many days."
Janayla held out two fingers on one hand and three fingers on the other. She didn't quite have the concept of counting yet, especially relating numbers of fingers to numbers of days. Ayla smiled.
"Can you say the counting words for how many that is?"
She touched each finger to help her.
1, 2, 4,
Janayla began.
"No, 3, and then 4.
3, 4, 5.
Janayla finished.
"That's very good," Ayla said.
"Yes, I think we can go riding together tomorrow."
Children were not separated from adults and regularly taught in an organized way. They learned by observation and trial of adult activities for the most part. Young children were with a caring adult most of the time until they showed a desire to explore on their own. And whenever they expressed a desire to try something, they were usually given a tool and shown how. Sometimes they'd find their own tool and try to copy someone. If they really showed an aptitude or desire, child-size versions might be made for them, but they weren't toys so much as smaller-size, fully functional tools. The exception was dolls. It was not easy to create a small-size, fully functional baby. Both girls and boys were given replicas of humans of various sizes and shapes when they were young if they wanted them. In addition, real babies were often cared for by only slightly older siblings, usually under the watchful eye of an adult. Community activities always included children. They were all encouraged to join in on the dancing and singing that were a part of various festivals, and some became quite good and were encouraged. Mental concepts like counting words were usually picked up incidentally through storytelling, games, and conversation, although one or more of the Zelandania would occasionally take a group of children off to explain or show some particular concept or activity.
"Usually I go riding with Jandi," Janayla said. "Can he come too?"
Ayla hesitated a moment.
"I suppose, if he wants to."
"Where is Jandi?"
Janayla said, looking around, suddenly realizing he wasn't there.
"I don't know,"
Ayla said.
"He was always here when I went to bed before. I'm glad you're here, Mother, but I like it better when you're both here,"
Janayla said. The thought echoed through Ayla's mind. "Yes, so do I, but he wanted to be with Marona." When Ayla woke the next morning, it took her a few moments to recognize where she was. The inside of the structure was familiar. She had slept in similar ones often.
Then it came to her. She was at the summer meeting. She glanced toward the place where her daughter usually slept. John Ayla was already gone. The child usually awoke suddenly and was up and out of bed the next instant. Ayla smiled and looked beside her at Jondalar's place. He wasn't there, and it was obvious he had stayed away all night. Suddenly it all came crashing down on her again. Thinking where he might have been made the hot sting of tears rise and threaten to overflow. Ayla had learned most of the customs of her adopted people and had heard stories and legends that helped to explain them, but she wasn't born into the culture, and appropriate behavior wasn't bred into her bones. She knew the general attitude about jealousy, but primarily in reference to Jondalar's lack of control as a youth. She felt that she had to demonstrate her ability to manage her emotions. Her experience in the cave had been such a physically and emotionally wrenching ordeal. She was not thinking clearly. She was afraid to turn to anyone for help, afraid it would show that, like Jondalar, she could not control herself. But she was so devastated that, unconsciously, she wanted to strike out, make him feel her pain. She hurt. And she wanted to hurt back, make him sorry. She even considered going back into the cave and begging the mother to take her, just to make Jondalar sorry. She forced back her tears. I will not cry, she thought. She had learned to control her tears long ago when she lived with the clan. No one will know how I feel, she thought. I will act as though nothing happened. I will visit friends. I will join in the activities. I will meet with the other acolytes. I will do everything I'm supposed to. Ayla lay awake, gathering courage to get up and face the day. I will have to talk to Zelandani and tell her what happened in the cave. It will not be easy to keep anything from her. She always knows. But I can't let her know. I can't tell her that I know how jealousy feels. Everyone who shared the tent with them knew something had happened between Ayla and Jondalar, and most had a fair idea what it was. For all that he thought he was being discreet, everyone knew about Morona and him. Morona enjoyed flaunting it too much. They had been glad to see Ayla come so things could get back to normal, but when Ayla stayed away all afternoon, a disheveled Morona tried to sneak back a different way, then packed up all her things and left, and Jondalar returned conspicuously disturbed and didn't come back that night to sleep. It wasn't hard to draw conclusions. When Ayla finally got up, several people were sitting around a fire outside having a morning meal. It was still early, earlier than she thought. Ayla joined them.
Proliva? Do you know where John Ayla is? I promised her I'd go riding with her today, but I have to talk to Zelandani first, Ayla said.
Proliva studied her closely. She was handling it much better today. Someone who didn't know her might not realize anything was wrong, but Proliva knew her better than most.
John Ayla went to Lavila's again. She's been spending a lot of time there, and Lavila loves it. That little sister of mine has loved having a camp full of children around since she was born, I think,
Proliva said.
Zelandani did ask me to tell you that she wants to see you as soon as you can. She said she'll be available all morning. I'll go after I eat, but I think I'll stop off and greet Marshaval and Lavila on my way,
Ayla said.
They'd like that, Proliva said.
As Ayla approached the campsite, she heard childish voices raised in a squabble.
So you won! I don't care!
John Ayla shouted at a boy somewhat bigger than her.
You can win all you want! You can take it all! But you can't have a baby, Bokavan! When I grow up, I'm going to have lots of babies, but you can't have any at all, so there!
John Ayla stood facing the boy, overpowering him in spite of his greater size. The wolf hovered close to the ground, his ears back, looking confused. He didn't know who to protect. Although the boy was bigger, he was younger. He looked hardly more than a baby, but an oversized baby.
His chubby short legs were bowed, his body was long in proportion, and his big barrel chest was accentuated by a baby's pot belly. Wolf ran to Ayla when he saw her, and she put her arms around him to calm him down. Bokovan's shoulders were already much broader than her daughter's, Ayla noticed. He had a big nose on a face that jutted out in the middle, accentuating that nose, and a receding chin. Though his forehead was straight and not sloped, he had a definite bony ridge over his eyes, not huge, but there. To Ayla there was no question that he had the cast of the clan, including his dark liquid eyes, but their shape was not quite clan. Like his mother, he had a slight epicanthic fold, making his eyes seem slanted, and at that moment they were filled with tears. Ayla thought he was an exotically handsome child, though not many others agreed. The boy ran to Dalinar.
"Dalinar," the boy cried. "Janaya say I can't hold a baby. Tell her not to."
Dalinar picked the boy up and put him on his lap.
"I'm afraid it is true, Bokovan," Dalinar said. "Boys can't have babies. Only girls can grow up to have babies. But someday you can mate with a woman and help take care of her babies."
"But I want a baby too," Bokovan said, crying a new sob. "Janela, that was a cruel thing to say," Ayla reprimanded. "Come here and say you're sorry to Bokovan. It's not nice to make him cry like that."
She did feel contrite. She really hadn't meant to make him cry.
"I'm sorry, Bokovan,"
Janela said. Ayla almost said that he would help to make babies when he grew up, but thought better of it. She hadn't even spoken to Zelandani yet, and Bokovan wouldn't understand anyway, but her heart went out to the boy. She knelt down in front of him.
"Hello, Bokovan. My name is Ayla, and I've been wanting to meet you. Your mother and Echozar are my friends."
"Can you say hello to Ayla, Bokovan?"
"Hello, Ayla,"
the boy said, then buried his head in Dalinar's shoulder.
"Can I hold him, Dalinar?"
"I'm not sure if he'll let you. He's very shy and not used to people," Dalinar said.
Ayla held her arms out to the boy. He looked at her in serious contemplation. There was a liquid depth to his dark, slanted eyes, and something more, she felt. He reached out to her, and she took the child from the man's arms. He was heavy. Ayla was surprised at his weight.
"You are going to grow up to be a very big man, Bokovan. Do you know that?"
Ayla hugged the boy to her.
"I'm really surprised he went to you," Dalinar said. "He never takes to strangers like that."
"How old is he now?"
she asked.
"We can count just past 3 years for him, but he's big for his age. That can be a problem, especially for a boy. People think he's older than he is. I was always tall for my age when I was a youngster. Jandalar was too," Dalinar said.
Why did it hurt so much just to hear Jandalar's name? Ayla thought. She must learn to overcome that. After all, if she was going to be Zelandani now, she needed to show composure. She had been training to control her mind in many ways. Why couldn't she control herself now? Ayla held the boy as she greeted Lavila and Marcheval.
"I understand Janela has been here quite often. It seems she'd rather be here than any other place. Thank you for looking after her."
"We're happy to have her," Lavila said. "She and my girls are good friends, but I'm glad you finally made it here this year. It was getting so late in the season, we didn't know if you were coming."
"I had planned to come before this, but things came up, and I couldn't leave sooner,"
Ayla said.
"How's Marthona? Everyone has missed her,"
Lavila said.
"She seems better. Which reminds me..."
She looked at Dalinar. He spoke before she could ask.
"Joharan sent some people for her yesterday, in the afternoon. If she's up to it, she should be here in a few days.
He saw the questioning look on Lavila's face.
They're going to carry her here on a litter if she'll allow it. It was Ayla's idea. Falara and young Aldenar seemed to be seeing a lot of each other, and she thought Marthona would want to be here if they're getting serious. I know how Jerrica would feel if it was Joplea.
The young couple smiled and nodded.
Have you seen Jerrica or Joplea yet, Ayla?
Dalinar asked.
No, I haven't, but I'm on my way to see Zelandani. Then I promised John Ayla we'd go riding together.
Why don't you come back to the Lanzadanyi camp this evening and stay for a meal?
Dalinar said. Ayla smiled.
I'd like that, she said.
Perhaps Jondalar can come, too. Do you know where he is?
Ayla lost her smile, Dalinar noted with some concern.
No, I'm afraid I don't,
Ayla said.
Well, there's always so much going on at summer meetings, Dalinar said, relieving her of Bokovan.
Yes, there certainly is, Ayla thought, as she continued on her way to meet with the Zelandania.
Chapter 33. I really didn't think anyone would be so foolish as to think he could deceive the Zelandania like that, the huge woman said. She and Ayla were sitting together in the large structure that was used by the Zelandania for a variety of purposes. Thank you for bringing these things to me, she paused. You did know Madraman was the one who brought down all the difficulties on Jondalar and me when he was young, and I was his Danyi woman.
Jondalar told me about it. Isn't that why he's missing his front teeth? Because Jondalar hit him?
Ayla asked.
He did more than hit him. It was terrible. He became so violent, it took several men to stop him, and he was hardly more than a child then. That was the main reason Jondalar was sent away. He's learned to control himself now. But then his feelings, his anger and fury, were overpowering. I don't think he even knew what he was doing to Madraman. It was like something else had gotten inside of him and pushed his elan out. He was beside himself.
The woman once known as Zolina closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and shook her head at the memory. Ayla didn't know what to say, but the story disturbed her. She had seen Jondalar jealous and upset, but never that angry.
It was probably for the best that someone brought it to the attention of the Zelandania. I had let it go too far, the first said. But Madraman didn't do it because it was the right thing to do. He had watched us secretly and did it because he was jealous of Jondalar. But you can understand why I was beginning to wonder if I was letting personal feelings interfere with my judgment.
I don't believe you would do that, Ayla said.
I hope not. I've had my doubts about Madraman for some time. I think he lacks something, a certain quality that is necessary to serve the mother. But he was admitted for training before I was first. When I originally questioned him about his call, I felt his story was too contrived. Several others thought the same, but some Zelandania wanted to give him every benefit. He's been an acolyte for so long, and he has yearned to be Zelandani from the beginning. That's why I felt it best to begin with an informal questioning. He has not had his final testing yet. These things you brought may help bring out the truth. That is all I want. He may have a good explanation for them. If so, then he will certainly be acknowledged. But if he is feigning his call, we need to know.
What will you do to him if the words he says are not true?
There isn't much we can do, except to forbid him from using any of the knowledge he gained as an acolyte and tell his cave about it. He will be disgraced, and that is hard punishment to bear. But there are no penalties. He really didn't harm anyone or commit any offense except to lie. Maybe lying should be punishable, but I'm afraid everyone would have to be punished then,
Zelandani said.
Clan people don't lie. They can't. With their way of speaking, it's always known, so they never learned how,
Ayla said.
That's what you have said before. I sometimes wish that were so with us, the Danyer said. That's one reason the Zelandania never allow an acolyte to be present when we initiate a new Zelandani. It doesn't happen often, but every once in a while one tries to take a shortcut. It never works. We have ways of finding out.
Several of the Zelandania had come into the shelter while they were talking, including the visiting Zelandania from the south who were still there. They were both curious and fascinated with the similarities and differences that the distance between them had created. They all chatted casually until everyone was there. Then the large woman stood up, went to the entrance, and talked with a couple of newly initiated Zelandania who were guarding the summer lodge to make sure no one tried to get close enough to listen. Ayla looked around the large summer dwelling. The double-walled circular construction of vertical panels, which enclosed the space, was similar to the sleeping lodges, but larger. The movable interior panels had been stacked near the outer walls, in between the raised sleeping places that circled the large space, forming a single large room. Many of the mats that covered the ground were woven with intricate, beautiful patterns, and various pads, pillows, and stools used for seating were scattered around near several low tables of various sizes. Most of them were graced with simple oil lamps, usually made of sandstone or limestone, that were lit day and night inside the windowless shelter. Zelandani closed the entrance flap and tied it shut, then walked back and sat down on a raised stool in the middle of the group.
Since it's so late in the season and your call was rather unexpected, I think the choice should be yours, Ayla. Do you want to submit to informal questioning first? That can be easier to begin with, to get you used to the process. Or do you want a full formal testing? The one who was first to serve the mother asked.
Ayla closed her eyes and bowed her head.
If we just talk about it informally, I'll have to go through it again, won't I?
She asked.
Yes, of course.
She thought about the baby she had lost and felt a stab of grief. She really didn't want to talk about it at all.
It was hard, she said. I don't want to go over it again and again. I think I was called. If not, I want to know as much as anyone. Can we just go ahead with it?
A fire was burning in a fireplace that was slightly off-center toward the back of the fairly large round space, but the smoke found its way out of the central hole. Water was steaming in a water bag that had been stretched across a frame and placed directly over the fire. The not-quite-waterproof, partially-cured leather from a large animal seeped just enough so that it would not catch fire. The cooking skin had been used before. The outside was blackened and the bottom somewhat shrunk and misshapen from, in effect, being cooked by the boiling water inside and the fire outside, but it was an effective pot for keeping liquid simmering over the hot coals in the hearth. The one who was first took a large pinch of some dried green plant material from a woven bowl and dropped it on the simmering water, then added three more pinches. The rather rank odor it gave off as it steamed was familiar to Ayla. The herb was datura, and had not only been used by Issa, the clan medicine woman who had cared for her and trained her, it had also been used by the Mogur in special ceremonies with the men of the clan. Ayla was very aware of its effects. She also knew it was not very prevalent in their immediate region. That meant it must have come from some distance away, making it rare and valuable.
"What is the name of that in Zelindanyi?"
Ayla asked, pointing at the dried material.
"It doesn't have a name in Zelindanyi, and the foreign name is hard to pronounce," the first said. "We just call it the Southeast Tea."
"Where do you get it?"
"From our visiting Danyers of the Southern Cave, the 24th, the same person who gave you the herbs we were going to experiment with together. They live near the border of the territory of another people and have more contact with their neighbors than they do with us. They even exchange mates. I'm surprised they haven't decided to affiliate, but they are fiercely independent and take pride in their Zelindanyi heritage. I don't even know what the plant looks like, or if it's more than one," the first explained.
Ayla smiled.
"I do. It's one of the first plants I ever learned about from Isa. I've heard several names for it. The Tura, Stinkleaf. The Mamutoi have a name that would translate as thornapple. It's tall, rather coarse, with large, strong-smelling leaves. It has big white, sometimes purple, flowers, shaped like funnels that flare out, and bears round, prickly, thorny fruits. All parts of it are useful, including the roots. If used wrong, it can make people behave strangely, and, of course, it can be fatally poisonous."
All the assembled Zelindania were suddenly very interested, especially the visitors. They were surprised that the young woman they had met earlier in the summer knew so much about it.
"Have you seen it around here?" Zelindani of the 11th asked.
"No, I haven't," Ayla said, "and I have been looking for it. I had some with me when I came, but it's gone, and I'd like to replace it. It's very useful."
"How do you use it?"
the visiting Danyer pressed.
"It's a soporific. Prepared one way, it can be used as an anesthetic, or when made another way, to help people relax. But it can be very dangerous. It was used by the Mogurs of the clan for sacred ceremonies,"
Ayla said. It was just these kinds of discussions that she loved best about being in the Zelindania. "Do different parts of the plant have different uses or different effects?" Zelindani of the 3rd asked.
"I think we should put aside these questions for now," the first interjected. "We are here for a different purpose."
Everyone settled back down, and those who had so eagerly asked questions looked a bit embarrassed. The first dipped out a cupful of the simmering liquid and set it aside to cool. The remainder was passed around to the others, who each got some, but a smaller amount. When it was cool enough to drink, the Danyer gave the cup to Ayla.
"This testing could be done without this drink, using meditation, but it would take longer. The tea seems to help us relax and get in the right state of mind," Zelindani explained.
Ayla drank down the cup of tepid, rather foul-tasting tea, and then, along with everyone else, assumed whatever pose was most conducive to meditation, and waited. Ayla was at first most interested in consciously observing how the drink was affecting her, thinking about how her stomach felt, how her breathing was affected, whether she could notice a relaxation of her arms and legs. But the effects were subtle. She didn't notice when her mind wandered off and she found herself thinking about something entirely unrelated. She was almost surprised, if she could have felt surprise, when she became aware that the first was talking to her in a low, soft voice.
"Are you getting sleepy, Ayla?" "That's good. Just relax. Let yourself feel sleepy. Very sleepy. Empty your mind and rest. Don't think of anything except my voice. Listen only to my voice. Let yourself be comfortable, relax, and hear only my voice,"
Zelindani droned on.
"Now tell me, Ayla, where were you when you decided to go into the cave?"
"I was on top of the cliff,"
Ayla began, then stopped.
"Go on, Ayla.
You were on top of the cliff. What were you doing? Take your time. Just tell the whole story in your own way. There's no hurry.
The short day was already marked. The sun had turned around and was going back, heading for winter. But I thought I'd mark a few more days. It was quite late, and I was tired. I decided to stir up the fire, make a little tea. I searched in my medicine bag for the mint. It was dark, but I was feeling the nuts to find the right bag. I finally found the one by the strong smell of mint. While the tea was steeping, I decided to practice saying the mother's song.
Ayla began to recite the song.
Out of the darkness, the chaos of time, the whirlwind gave birth to the mother sublime. She woke to herself, knowing life had great worth. The dark, empty void grieved the great mother earth. The mother was lonely. She was the only.
It's my favorite of all the legends and histories, so I repeated it while I was drinking the tea, Ayla said, continuing on with the next few verses.
From the dust of her birth, she created the other, a pale, shining friend, a companion, a brother. They grew up together, learned to love and to care, and when she was ready, they decided to pair. Around her, he'd hover, her pale, shining lover. She was happy at first with her one counterpart. Then the mother grew restless, unsure in her heart. She loved her fair friend, her dear compliment. But something was missing. Her love was unspent. She was the mother. She needed another. She dared the great void, the chaos, the dark, to find the cold home of the life-giving spark. The whirlwind was fearsome, the darkness complete. Chaos was freezing and reached for her heat. The mother was brave. The danger was grave. She drew from cold chaos the creative source. Then, conceiving within, she fled with life force. She grew with the life that she carried inside and gave of herself with love and with pride. The mother was bearing. Her life she was sharing.
It all seemed so clear in her mind, almost as though she was there again.
I was bearing, too, sharing my life with the growing life force inside. I felt so close to the mother.
She smiled dreamily. Several of the Zelandania looked at each other with some surprise, then at the first. The big woman nodded, indicating that she knew Ayla was pregnant.
And then what happened, Ayla? What happened on that cliff?
The moon was so big, so bright. It filled the whole sky. I felt myself drawn to it, drawn up into it,
Ayla continued, telling how she rose above the land and how the column of rock glowed, then how she had become frightened and ran down to the ninth cave and then headed towards downriver and on to the river. She told how she had walked along a river, like the river but not quite the same, for a long, long time. It seemed like days and days, but the sun never shone. It was always night, lit only by the huge, bright moon.
I think her shining lover, her friend, was helping me to find my way, Ayla said. Finally, I came to the place of the sacred fountain. I could see the path up to the cave glowing in the light of Lumi, her shining friend. I knew he was telling me to go that way. I started up, but the path was so long, I wondered if I was going the right way. And then suddenly, I was there. I saw the dark opening of the cave, but I was afraid to go in. Then I heard, she dared the great void, the chaos, the dark. And I knew I had to be brave, like the mother, and brave the dark, too.
Ayla continued her story, and the gathered Zelandania were completely enthralled. Whenever she stopped or hesitated too long, Zelandani encouraged her to go on in her low, soothing, unhurried voice.
"Ayla, here, drink this."
It was Zelandani's voice, but it sounded so far away.
"Ayla, sit up and drink this."
The voice was commanding now.
"Ayla!"
She felt herself being raised up and opened her eyes. The big, familiar woman held a cup to her lips. Ayla sipped it. It made her realize she was thirsty, and she drank some more. The mist was beginning to clear. She was helped to sit up and became aware of voices around her speaking softly, but with an undertone of excitement.
"How are you feeling, Ayla?"
the first asked.
"I have a little headache, and I'm still thirsty," she said. "This tea will make you feel better,"
the Danya of the Ninth Cave said.
"Have some more."
Ayla drank it.
"Now I think I have to pass water," she said, smiling.
"There's a night basket behind that screen," a Zelandani said, indicating the way.
Ayla stood up, feeling slightly dizzy, but it cleared.
"I think we should let her get settled,"
Ayla heard the one who was first say.
"She has been through a great deal, but I think there is little doubt she will be the next first."
"I believe you are right," she heard another voice say.
She heard more of the Zelandania talking among themselves, but she wasn't listening any more. What did they mean? She wasn't sure she liked hearing them talk about the next first. When she returned, the Zelandani of the Ninth Cave asked,
"Do you remember everything you told us?"
Ayla closed her eyes, frowning with concentration.
"I think so," she finally said. "We would like to ask you some questions. Do you feel strong enough to answer, or would you like to rest longer?" "I think I'm awake and don't feel tired. I would like some more tea, though. My mouth still feels dry,"
Ayla said. Her cup was refilled.
"Our questions should help you to interpret your own experience," the Danyer said. "No one else really can."
Ayla nodded.
"Do you know how long you were in the cave?"
the first asked.
"Marthona said almost 4 days," Ayla said. "But I don't recall too much after I first came out. Some people were there, waiting for me. They carried me back on a litter, and the next few days are not clear." "Do you think you would be able to explain some things to us?"
"I'll try."
"The ice walls you spoke of, if I remember correctly, you told us once of falling down into a crevasse on your way across the glacier. By some miracle, you landed on a ledge, and Jondalar pulled you out. Is that right?"
the first asked.
"Yes, he threw me a rope and told me to wrap it around my waist. He attached the other end to his horse. Racer pulled me out,"
Ayla clarified.
"Few people who fall into crevasses are fortunate enough to get out. You came very close to death, then. It is not uncommon for acolytes, when they are being called, to experience again those times when they were near the spirit world. Would you say that was a possible interpretation of the ice walls?"
the first asked.
"Yes,"
Ayla said, then looked at the large woman.
"I didn't think about it before, but that could explain some of the other things, too. I almost died crossing a flooded river on our way here, and I'm sure it was Ataroa's face I saw. She would have killed me for sure if Wolf hadn't saved me."
"I'm sure that accounts for some of the visions, though I haven't heard the full story of your journey here. Obviously, most people have,"
said the visiting Zelandani.
"But what was that black void? Was it a reference to the Mother's Song,
or did it have some other significance? You almost had me terrified.
There was some quiet laughter and a few smiles at her comment, but some nods of agreement as well.
And what about the warm sea and the creatures burrowing in the mud and in the trees? That was all very strange, said another. Not to mention all the mammoths and reindeer and the bison and horses.
One question at a time, please, the first said. There are many things we'd all like to know, but we are in no rush. Do you have any interpretations for those things, Ayla?
I don't have to interpret. I know what they are, Ayla said, but I don't understand them.
Well, what were they? Zelindani of the third cave asked.
I think most people know that when I lived with the clan, the woman who was like a mother to me was a medicine woman who taught me most of what I know about healing. She also had a daughter, and we all lived at the hearth of her sibling, her brother, who was called Kreb. Most people of the clan knew Kreb as the Mogur. A Mogur was a man who knew the spirit world, and the Mogur was like the one who was first, the most powerful of all the Mogurs.
He was like a Zelindani, then, the visiting Zelindani said.
In a sense, he wasn't a healer. The medicine women are the healers. They are the ones who know healing plants and practices. But it is the Mogur who calls upon the spirit world to aid in the healing,
Ayla explained.
The two parts are separate. I always thought of them as inseparable, the woman unknown to Ayla said.
You might also be surprised to know that only men were allowed to contact the spirit world to be Mogurs, and only women were healers, medicine women, Ayla said.
That is surprising.
I don't know about the other Mogurs, but the Mogur had a special ability in the way he called upon the spirit world. He could go back to their beginnings and show others the way. He even took me back once, although he wasn't supposed to, and I think he was very sorry that he did. He changed after that. He lost something. I wish it had never happened.
How did it happen? The first asked.
There was a route they used, only for the special ceremony with all the Mogurs at the clan gathering. It had to be prepared a particular way, and only the medicine women of Issa's line knew how.
You mean they have summer meetings, too? The Zelindani of the 11th asked.
Not every summer, only once in 7 years, when it was time for the clan gathering. Issa was sick. She couldn't make the trip, and her daughter was not yet a woman, and the route had to be prepared by a woman, not a girl. Although I didn't have the clan memories, Issa had been training me to be a medicine woman. It was decided that I would have to be the one to prepare the route for the Mogurs. Issa explained how I would have to chew the root and then spit it out into a special bowl. She cautioned me not to swallow any of the juice while I was chewing. When we got to the clan gathering, the Mogurs were not going to allow me to make it. I was born to the others, not to the clan. But finally, at the last moment, Kreb came for me and told me to prepare myself. I went through the ritual, but it was difficult for me, and I ended up swallowing some, and I had made a little too much. Issa had told me it was too precious to be wasted, and by then I wasn't thinking clearly. I drank what was left in the bowl so it wouldn't go to waste, and without meaning to, I went into the cave nearby, and deep inside I found the Mogurs. No woman was ever supposed to participate in the men's ceremonies, but I was there, and had also swallowed the drink. I can't really explain what happened after that, but somehow Kreb knew I was there. I was falling into a deep black void. I thought I would be lost in it forever. But Kreb came for me, pulled me back. I'm sure he saved my life. The people of the clan have a special quality to their minds that we don't, just as we have a special quality that they don't. They have memories. They can remember what their ancestors knew. They don't really have to learn what they need to know like we do. They only have to need to know it or to be reminded to remember. They can learn something new, but it's more difficult for them. Their memories go back a long way. In certain circumstances, they can go back to their beginnings, to a time so long ago there were no people and the earth was different. Perhaps back to the time when the great Earth Mother gave birth to her son and first made the land green with her birth waters. Kreb had the ability to direct the other Mogurs and lead them back to those times. After he saved me, he took me with him and the other Mogurs back into the memories. If you go back far enough, we all have the same memories, and he helped me to find mine. I shared the experience with them. In the memories, when the earth was different, so long ago it is hard to imagine, those who came before people once lived in the depths of the ocean. When the water dried and they were stranded in the mud, they changed and learned to live on land. They changed many times after that, and with Kreb, I was able to go there with them. It was not quite the same for me as it was for them, but still I was able to go there. I saw the ninth cave before the Zelindanyi lived there. I recognized the falling stone when I first arrived, and then I went someplace Kreb was not able to go. He blocked out the other Mogurs so they wouldn't know I was there, and then he told me to leave, to get out of the cave before they discovered me. He never told them I was there. I would have been killed outright if they knew, but he was never the same after that.
There was a silence when Ayla finished. Zelindani, who was first, broke the silence. In our histories and legends, the Great Earth Mother gave birth to all life, and then to those like us who would remember her. Who is to say how Dani formed us? What child remembers its life in the womb? Before it is born, a baby breathes water and struggles to breathe when first born. You have all seen and examined human life before it was fully formed, when it was expelled early. In the first stages, it does resemble a fish, and then animals. It may be she is remembering her own life in the womb before she was born. Ayla's interpretation of her early experience with the ones she calls the clan does not deny the legends or the mother's song. It adds to them, explains them. But I am overwhelmed that those we have called animals for so long would have such great knowledge of the mother, and having such knowledge in their memories, how they could not recognize her. The Zelindania were relieved. The first had managed to take what at first seemed like a basic conflict of beliefs, told by Ayla with such credible conviction that it could almost create a schism, and instead blend them together. Her interpretation added strength to their beliefs rather than tearing them apart. They could, perhaps, except that the ones they called flatheads were intelligent in their own way, but the Zelindania had to maintain that the beliefs of those people were still inferior to their own. The flatheads had not recognized the Great Earth Mother.
So it was that root that brought on the black void and the strange creatures, Zelindani of the Fifth said.
It is a powerful root. When I left the clan, I had taken some with me. I didn't plan to. It was just in my medicine bag. After I became a Mamutoi, I told Mamut about the root and my experience with Kreb in the cave. As a young man, he had once been injured while traveling, and the clan medicine woman healed him. He stayed with them for a while, learned some of their ways, and participated at least once in a ceremony with the men of the clan. He wanted us to try the root together. I think he felt that if Kreb could control it, so could he. But there are some differences between the clan and the others. With Mahmud, we did not go back into past memories. We went somewhere else. I don't know where. It was very strange and frightening. We went through that void and almost didn't return. But someone wanted us back so much. His need overpowered everything else.
Ayla looked down at her hands.
His love was so strong. Then,
she said under her breath. Only Zelandani noticed the pain in Ayla's eyes when she looked up.
Mahmud said he would never use that route again. He said he was afraid he'd get lost in that void and never return, never find the next world. Mahmud said that if I ever used that route again, I should make sure that I had strong protection, or I might never return.
You still have some of that root?
The first was quick to ask.
Yes. I found more in the mountains near the Sharmudoi, but I haven't seen any since. I don't think it grows in this region,
Ayla said.
The root you have, is it still good? It's been a long time since your journey,
the large woman pressed.
If it's dried properly and kept out of the light, Isa told me that the root concentrates, gets stronger with age,
Ayla said. The one who was first nodded, more to herself than anyone.
I got a strong impression that you felt the pain of childbirth,
the visiting Zelandani said.
Did you ever come near death giving birth?
Ayla had told the first about her harrowing experience giving birth to her first child, her son of mixed spirits, and the large woman thought that might account for part of Ayla's ordeal of childbirth in the cave, but she didn't think it was necessary to tell everyone.
I think the most important question is the one we have all been avoiding,
the first interjected.
The mother's song is perhaps the oldest of the elder legends. Different caves, different traditions, often have minor variations, but the meaning is always the same. Would you recite it for us, Ayla? Not the whole song, just the last part of it.
Ayla nodded, closed her eyes, thought about where to begin.
With a thunderous roar, her stones split asunder, and from the great cave that opened deep under, she birthed once again from her cavernous heart, bringing forth all the creatures of earth from the start. From the mother forlorn, more children were born. Each child was different. Some were large and some small. Some could walk and some fly. Some could swim and some crawl. But each form was perfect, each spirit complete. Each one was a model whose shape could repeat. The mother was willing. The green earth was filling. All the birds and the fish and the animals born would not leave the mother this time to mourn. Each kind would live near the place of its birth and share the expanse of the great mother earth. Close to her they would stay. They could not run away.
Ayla had started out rather tentatively, but as she got into it, her voice gained more power. Her delivery became more sure.
They all were her children. They filled her with pride, but they used up the life force she carried inside. She had enough left for a last innovation, a child who'd remember who made the creation, a child who'd respect and learn to protect. First woman was born full-grown and alive, and given the gifts she would need to survive. Life was the first gift, and like Mother Earth,
She woke to herself knowing life had great worth. First woman defined, the first of her kind. Next was the gift of perception, of learning, the desire to know, the gift of discerning. First woman was given the knowledge within that would help her to live, then impart to her kin. First woman would know how to learn, how to grow. Her life force near gone, the mother was spent. To pass on life's spirit had been her intent. She caused all of her children to create life anew, and woman was blessed to bring forth life too. But woman was lonely. She was the only. The mother remembered her own loneliness, the love of her friend, and his hovering caress. With the last spark remaining, her labor began. To share life with woman, she created first man. Again she was giving. One more was living.
Ayla spoke the language so fluently, most people hardly noticed her accent anymore. They were used to the way she said certain words and sounds. It seemed normal. But as she repeated the familiar verses, her speech peculiarity seemed to add an exotic quality, a touch of mystery that somehow made it seem that the verses came from some other place, perhaps some otherworldly place. To woman and man the mother gave birth, and then for their home she gave them the earth, the water, the land, and all her creation. To use them with care was their obligation. It was their home to use, but never abuse. For the children of earth, the mother provided the gifts to survive, and then she decided to give them the gift of pleasure and caring that honors the mother with the joy of their sharing. The gifts are well earned when honors returned. The mother was pleased with the pair she created. She taught them to love and to care when they mated. She made them desire to join with each other. The gift of their pleasures came from the mother. Before she was through, her children loved, too. This was the place that the song usually ended, and Ayla hesitated a moment before she continued. Then, taking a breath, she recited the verse that had filled her head with its booming, metered resonance deep in the cave.
Her last gift, the knowledge that man has his part. His need must be spent before new life can start. It honors the mother when the couple is paired, because woman conceives when pleasures are shared. Earth's children were blessed. The mother could rest.
There was an uneasy silence when she finished. Not one of the powerful women and men there knew quite what to say. Finally, the Zelandani from the 14th cave spoke up.
I have never heard that verse, or anything like it.
Nor have I, said the first. The question is, what does it mean?
What do you think it means? Said the 14th.
I think it means that woman alone does not create new life, the first said.
No, of course not. It has always been known that the spirit of a man is blended with the spirit of a woman to make a new life, the 11th protested.
Ayla spoke up.
The verse does not speak of spirit. It says woman conceives when pleasures are shared, she said. It is not just a man's spirit. A new life will not start if a man's need is not spent. A child is as much a man's as it is a woman's, a child of his body as well as hers. It is the joining of man and woman that starts life.
Are you saying that joining is not for pleasures? Asked the third, with a tone of incredulous disbelief.
No one doubts that joining is a pleasure, the first said with a sardonic smile. I think it means that Donnie's gift is more than the gift of pleasure. It is another gift of life. I think that is what the verse means, The great Earth Mother did not create men just to share pleasures with women and to provide for her and her children. A woman is the blessed of Dani because she brings forth new life. But a man is blessed too. Without him, no new life can start. Without men and without the pleasures, all life would stop. There was an outburst of excited voices. "Surely there are other interpretations," said the visiting Selendani. "This seems too much, too hard to believe."
"Give me another interpretation," the first countered. "You heard the words. What is your explanation?"
The Selendani hesitated, paused.
"I would have to think about it. It needs time for thought, for study." "You can think about it for a day or a year or as many years as you can number. It will not change the interpretation."
Ayla was given a gift with her calling. She was chosen to bring this new gift of the knowledge of life from the mother, the one who was first said. There was another buzz of commotion.
"But gifts are always exchanged. No one receives a gift without the obligation of giving one in return. One of equal value,"
the Zelandani of the second cave said. It was the first time she had spoken.
"What gift could Ayla give in return to the mother that would be of equal value?"
There was silence as everyone looked at Ayla.
"I gave her my baby,"
she said, knowing in her heart that the child she had lost was one started by Jandalar, that it was hers and Jandalar's child. "Will I ever have another baby that will be Jandalar's, too?" she wondered.
"The mother was honored deeply when that baby was started. It was a baby I wanted more than I can tell you. Even now my arms ache with the emptiness of that loss. I may have another child some day, but I will never have that child."
Ayla fought back tears.
"I don't know how much the mother values the gift she gives her children, but I know of nothing I value more than my children. I don't know why she wanted my child, but the great mother filled my head with the words of her gift after my baby was gone."
Tears glistened in Ayla's eyes as much as she tried to control them. She bowed her head and said quietly,
"I wish I could return her gift and have my baby back."
There was a gasp from several who were gathered. One did not take the mother's gifts lightly, nor did one openly wish to give them back. She might be greatly offended, and who could know what she might do then?
"Are you sure you were pregnant?"
the 11th asked.
"I missed 3 moon times, and I had all the other signs. Yes, I'm sure,"
Ayla explained.
"And I'm sure," the first said. "I knew she was carrying a child before I left for the summer meeting."
"Then she must have miscarried. That would account for the childbirth pain I thought I sensed in her telling," said the visiting Selendani.
"I think it's obvious that she miscarried. I believe the miscarriage brought her dangerously close to death while she was in the cave," the first said. "That must have been why the mother wanted her baby. The sacrifice was necessary. It brought her close enough to the next world for the mother to speak to her, to give her the verse for the gift of knowledge."
"I am sorry," said the Zelandani of the second cave. "Losing a child can be a terrible burden to bear."
She said it with such genuine feeling, it made Ayla wonder.
"If there are no objections, I think it is time for the ceremony,"
the one who was first said. There were nods of agreement.
"Are you ready, Ayla?"
The young woman frowned with consternation as she looked around. Ready for what? It all seemed so sudden. The Danyar could see her distress.
"You said you wanted to have the full formal testing. The understanding is that if you satisfied the Zelandania, you would progress to the next level. You would no longer be an acolyte. You would leave here, Zelandani,"
the first explained.
"You mean right now?"
Ayla asked.
The first mark of acceptance, yes,
the first said, as she picked up a sharp flint knife. Chapter 34
There will be a more public ceremony when you are presented to the people as a Zelandani, but the marks are made with acceptance, in private, with only the Zelandania. As you increase in rank, and marks are added, they are made in the presence of Zelandania and acolytes, but never in public, the Zelandani who was first said. The large woman who carried herself with the dignity and power her position conferred asked, Are you ready? Ayla swallowed and frowned.
Yes,
she said, and hoped she was. The first looked around the gathering, making sure she had everyone's attention. Then she began.
This woman is fully trained to fulfill all the duties of the Zelandania, and it is the first among those who serve the mother who attests to her knowledge.
There were nods and sounds of acknowledgement.
She has been called and tested. Are there any among us who question her call?
Zelandani asked. There were no dissenters. There was never any doubt.
Do all here agree to accept this woman as a Zelandani into the ranks of the Zelandania?
We agree, came the unanimous response. Ayla watched as the woman who was Zelandani of the second cave came forward and held out a bowl of something dark. She knew what it was. A part of her mind was observing, not just participating. The bark of mountain ash, called a rowan tree, had been burned in a ceremonial fire and then sifted in the wind to a fine gray powder. The ashes of rowan bark were astringent, antiseptic. Then the woman who was the Zelandani from a distant cave, the one unknown to her, brought forth a steaming reddish liquid, last autumn's dried rowan berries boiled down to a concentrated liquid. And strained. Ayla knew the juice from the rowan berries was acidic and healing. Zelandani, who was first, picked up a bowl of soft, white, partially congealed, pure tallow that had been rendered with boiling water from aurochs fat, and added a little to the powdered ashes, then some of the steaming red rowan berry juice. She mixed it with a small carved wooden spatula, adding more fat and liquid until it satisfied her. Then she faced the young woman and picked up the sharp flint knife.
The mark you will receive can never be removed. It will declare to all that you acknowledge and accept the role of Zelandani. Are you ready to accept that responsibility?
Ayla took a deep breath and watched the woman with the knife approach, knowing what was coming. She felt a twinge of fear, swallowed hard, and closed her eyes. She knew it would hurt, but that wasn't what she was dreading. Once this was done, there was no going back. This was her last chance to change her mind. Suddenly, she recalled hiding in a shallow cave, trying to squeeze herself into the stone wall at her back. She saw the sharp, curved claws on the huge paw of a cave lion reaching in and screamed with pain as four parallel gashes were raked across her left thigh. Squirming away, she found a small space to the side and pulled her legs in closer, away from the claws. Her memory of being chosen and marked by her cave lion totem had never been so clear and intense before. Reflexively, she reached for her left thigh to feel the different texture of the skin of the four parallel scars. They were recognized as clan totem marks when she was accepted into Brunn's clan, though traditionally a cave lion totem chose male, not female. How many marks had been carved into her body in her life? Besides the four marks of her protective totem spirit, Mogur had nicked the base of her throat to draw blood when she became the woman who hunts. She was given her clan hunting talisman, the red-stained oval of mammoth ivory, to show that in spite of the fact that she was a woman, she was accepted as a hunter of the clan, though only allowed to use a sling. She no longer carried the talisman with her, or her amulet with the rest of her signs either, though at that moment she wished she had them. They were hidden behind the carved, woman-shaped dungeon.